Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Eddie Yoon is the author of Super Consumers. He's the founder of Eddie Wood Grow, LLC, a think tank, and an advisory firm on growth. He believes to grow, any business needs to hire people who are highly passionate and engaged. He's here to talk about that. Eddie, welcome to the program. Tell us.
Thanks for having me.
We're glad to have you. Tell us about your ideas, how to implement, and your website.
Sure. So I started my new entity, Eddie Wood Grow. It's based on a Hawaii waterman named Eddie Aikau. There's actually a great ESPN 30 for 30 if you're interested in him, but he was a famous big wave surfer, and there's actually an invitation-only big wave surf competition that's named after him, the Quicksilver Eddie Aikau. They only hold it on Oahu on the North Shore at Waimea Bay when the surf is big enough, and it's invite-only to the best of the best big wave surfers. And similarly, I wanted to start out my own growth strategy enterprise, working with only clients who are really interested in growing the right way, which is to grow the market or create a new category. So that's kind of what I'm about here. And I think part of what I've done and thought about growth strategy for the last 20 years when I was a senior partner at the Cambridge Group before this was this idea of super consumers, and that every category has, say, the top 10% of consumers are high passion, high spending, and they're the smartest in the category. And that routinely what I've said to companies of all sizes, that the best way to grow is to learn from these folks and to tap into them and figure out what they would pay more for and to drive growth that way. But increasingly, what I've realized is that it's actually a great hiring technique as well to make sure that your employees are the most give you the most energy and creativity that they can.
That's a fascinating approach. So you're going to hire or you're going to encourage these whatever strategy or business mix they're in your consulting practice. You're inviting your customers to try and identify the super consumers.
Yeah, just about anything. I think it's if any category that's out there, what I found is that these super consumers exist. And one of the really cool things that I found, and so like I would say that the majority of my career has been spent helping big businesses and small businesses identify that these folks are out there. They're not the it's not Bigfoot or the unicorn. They exist in every category, and they are perfectly willing to help you out. And so like I describe myself, I'm a T-shirt from Hawaii super consumer. So part of the reason why I named my firm Eddie Wood Grow is that I was born and raised in Hawaii, and I live in Chicago now. And while it's we're having the tail end of a very nice summer, the winters here are pretty harsh. But for me, being homesick, whenever I go home, I buy a half dozen, maybe eight T-shirts from Hawaii, and that's kind of, I have about 50 of them lying around to my wife's chagrin. She would much rather me get rid of them because they're not particularly practical in the wintertime, but they make me feel comfortable. I like wearing them around the house. And one of the other findings that I found in my book was if you're a super consumer of one category, you're a super consumer of nine others. So if you're a super consumer of T-shirts like I am, you can't wear them in the winter without turning up the electricity. So I am a super consumer of electricity. My utility bills are super high in the summer or the winter time, which again my wife is not happy about. And that makes me a super consumer of coffee and Keurig, because what it means is I'm a early morning person and my wife is a night owl. And so One of the things that I do to make up for the fact that I annoy her with my T-shirts and our utility bills is that I make her coffee every morning in her favorite thermos, just the way that she likes it, and I leave it beside her bed to wake up. And that way I buy myself out of the doghouse every time I screw something up in general or with the utility bill or my T-shirts. But that's my little story of why super consumers, they exist. They kind of are bigger than just what you are in business for, but if you can really figure out who they are, why they behave the way they do, that there's a real interesting business opportunity that almost anyone can have to figure out how to grow. And it's not just your growth strategy in terms of how you market and how you sell what you make or you innovate a new product, but increasingly what I'm finding is that, I don't know if you guys know, there's a Gallup study that talks about workforce engagement, and it's pretty striking. It's this whole idea that people, about two-thirds of employees at work are not engaged at all. And actually, one-third of employees are actively disengaged, and they're either looking for another job or they're maybe even trying to do your business harm. And that the one way to mitigate that is you can't figure out bad apples from a good apple necessarily, but if you increasingly hire people who are, in fact, super consumers of what you make or your category, then the simple fact that they're into what it is that you do is going to help you out, not only from an engagement standpoint, but increase your energy, the creativity, but also give you better insights for how they might actually grow your business too.
Let me ask you a question about that.
Yeah.
Inherently in defining a person as a super consumer, I would think – and I have to admit, this is the first time I've heard of this. Intuitive. If somebody is a super consumer in certain categories, they have to have a certain degree of wealth or income. And if they do, why would they give up whatever it is they're doing today, even though they're a super consumer, and take the risk of starting over with somebody else who happens to be in their passionate business?
Yeah, it's a great question. So one of the common things that we found in doing a lot of the data mining that I did over when I was at the Cambridge Group, we were owned by Nielsen at the time, by the way, which is a global data company around consumers. And the big data access that I had was really quite fascinating, was we calculated and identified super consumers in 125 different categories. So anything that you buy in the grocery store, we found a super consumer of them. And thanks to the big data set of Nielsen, you're able to kind of cross-tab the data and see kind of what the income breaks are. And much to everyone's surprise, that there was zero correlation with how much you spent in a category and your income level. Now, there are certain categories for sure, maybe outside of the grocery store, that if you are a super consumer of, say, sports cars, that's a pretty good correlation to how much income you do have or you don't have. But the fact of the matter is that super consumers can exist in a lot of different categories. And so you could be a cheese super consumer, as an example, a White Sox super consumer. And these are people who don't necessarily have, you know, one particular spike in income. And so one of the common things that you just touched upon is exactly that, is that this myth-busting of if you are spending a lot and you're passionate in a lot of something, that therefore you're high income. That's not actually true, because if you think about actually back in the day when the cell phone first came out, one of the really interesting findings that we found for AT&T back was that the people who spent the most money on their cell phones were actually lower income, was the interesting thing, because you would have thought it might have been a business person, but in fact it was somebody who their income was such that they didn't really have the means to go out on vacations and that were extravagant. They didn't have the means to go out to eat that often. What they did have the ability to do was to spend money on their cell phone minutes, and talking to friends for hours and talking to family members, that became their form of entertainment and their luxury spend there. And so I would say that the categories are defined very differently, so that income is not necessarily correlated with your super consumer-ness, as it were.
Did I hear you say a few moments ago that your principal focus was inside the grocery store?
Well, a lot of what my research and data, the access that I had, was anything that was scanned in the grocery store. I have done my growth strategy work beyond that into technology and financial services and media as well, but I have a lot of data from within the grocery store.
So give us a profile of a small business person who might come to you, and what are they looking for from you?
Oh, in terms of the growth strategy?
Yeah. The benefits the features and the benefits that your company can bring to a small entrepreneur who's really committed to wanting to grow his business,
yep,
but really doesn't know how to do it.
So I'll give you a great example here. Is there's a gentleman by the name of Charlie Williams, actually in Florida, who's got he's starting up a business called Inside Out Counsel. And so his idea, which I quite like and I resonate myself as being a small business guy, is that you know, when you're starting a business, there's a lot of legal headaches you might have, be it setting up your LLC or figuring out what's kind of the do's and don'ts of your business that you have set up there. But what he describes as the problem is that most people and most small businesses don't get the legal help that they want because they don't know who to ask for one, or if they do find somebody that they think is credible, that they're scared of the way that the legal profession pay, the billing model works, right? It's the bill by the hour, and so if I ask a question, am I going to get charged an exorbitant amount and, you know, be surprised with a bill? So what he has done is he's kind of flipped it on its head, and he said, you know what, forget the traditional way that law firms charge for services, and let's figure out a different way of doing it, which is to say, pay me a fixed fee, and for a month I'll give you an all-you-can-eat legal buffet. You can call as much as you want. You can get access to a lot of different attorneys and a lot of different disciplines. And because what he found was that the thing that he was competing against was not for small businesses in particular. They're not big law firms. They were actually people doing nothing. Because that was the problem, was the way that the industry was constructed, it was very conducive, and the incentives were such that you just kind of whistled past the graveyard. If you had a legal question, you hope nothing bad would happen. So Charlie is someone who's really set it up a different way. Now, his question to me was run around marketing. And so, you know, we've set up this enterprise, so the people who are using it love it. How do I figure out who else is there? Part of what I talked about, and we had a fun conversation just last week around who are my legal super consumers, and that might seem like a funny thing to think about, you know, because there's not a lot of people who are saying, hey, come check out my fantasy, you know, legal team services that's there because I'm really into my legal services. But you do have people who spend a lot on legal services, and they care a lot about it because they're kind of the, you know, Boy Scout, be prepared, worst-case scenario type folks. And so one of the things that I talked about with Charlie was that, you know, this idea of a super consumer of one category is a super consumer of nine others. I did some work for a standby generator company. You guys might be familiar, just given all the troubles that you guys have had in Florida. But Generac is the one. And typically, convincing somebody to buy a standby generator outside of a bad hurricane is a difficult thing. And so what we found through some big data mining was that the people who were willing to buy a generator off-cycle without a real reason to buy one, they were also super consumers of life insurance. They had 2 to 3 times the amount of life insurance than they actually needed. They were super consumers of vitamins, people who, you know, essentially vitamins function like insurance, right? You take this pill now for a little bit of a cost for an unknown benefit down in the future. And then they were also super consumers of refrigerators and freezers, and that, you know, and this was the secret aha, was that these are people, they stored food just, again, for a rainy day. And for them, it was like, well, shoot, I have $3,000 worth of food that I've stored up. Spending $7,000 on a generator might actually make a lot of sense for me to save that there. And so what I was kind of illustrating for him was that the way that you prospect for new customers may not be just the, hey, anyone out there in need of a lawyer, but you're too scared to hire one because of the billable rate model that's out there, but anyone who's kind of going above and beyond to protect themselves and their businesses might actually be a great way to find new customers out there. And so that's part of the things that I help companies with, is oftentimes, you know, reimagine your consumer or your ideal customer, not just from the lens of what you do, but from their whole lives, and you might find a wholly different way of reaching them to help you drive growth in your business.
Dan, we've got to interrupt right now. This hour is moving fast, but we need to stop for our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Eddie Yoon, who's giving us a fascinating lesson in the super consumer.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
We're here with Eddie Yoon, who's talking about the super consumer and how you should also hire him or her when staffing your company, big or small. Dan, I'm going to jump in here for a question. Generally, if I may, Eddie, it's always assumed that younger people are more super consumers and more enthusiastic than older people. Is that true, or is that a myth?
You know, that's another myth too, I find. And it's you know, and sometimes people subdivide categories younger and older with it. And one of the great joys that I have is that super consumers seem to transcend age and life stage with it. They just kind of are into the category that they're into. And so you think about, I'm trying to think of a good analogy for you here, is that you have super consumers of video games. As an here's a great example, is that if I told you who is a super consumer of video games, or someone who spends a lot of money and cares quite a bit about it, you might picture like a teenage boy in a basement, you know, playing some violent shoot 'em up game, you know, called like Call of Duty. And you would be right in the sense that the traditional video game systems like the Xboxes and PlayStation 4s, they're high cost, high engagement, they're difficult to learn, and that the majority of the consumers, almost 90% are male, 90% are kind of under 30. Now, if I told you that through tapping into super consumers, that the video game industry, the number of global consumers who play video games has nearly tripled from about 50 million to 132 million in 8 years. And the question would be, well, has the number of teenage boys tripled that way? And the answer is, in fact, it's casual games. So if you have a smartphone out there, and if you've either ever played Candy Crush or Words with Friends or any of these kind of casual games that are out there, you'll know people, or maybe you have them on your own phone. But these are the things that have really driven the amount of growth there. And so if you remember, I talked beforehand about the top 10% of consumers in a typical grocery store category drive about 30 to 70% of category sales. Super consumers in video games, for casual games in particular, like a Candy Crush, two things that are really notable. Number one is that 0.15% of people who play these games generate 50% of the revenue in the category. And that's because the vast majority of these people play for free, but the people who are really, really into it, they spend extra money above and beyond to have more fun, have extra lives, or customize their games. But the other thing that's really notable about these people is that 90% or 85% of them are women who play the game, so not men, like the Call of Duty video games, and that the age strata spans from the 30s into well into the 70s and 80s, that the number of people who are playing these games, they're vastly different demographically than the traditional category, and that the people who are now playing them, they're vastly different, not only from a gender perspective, from an age perspective as well, too.
But 59% of our audience are owners or presidents of small businesses. What is your idea of who a super consumer employee should be?
Yeah, you know, it's if you are a small business in what I would call a business to consumer sector, so you primarily, you're serving consumers, maybe you're making food and beverage, maybe it's a consumer service of some kind, is that what I would always say is that, you know, when you are looking to hire people, just add it to your list of questions that you're doing from an HR perspective. And so there's a company that makes high-end veterinary pet food where their mission is to extend the lives of their pets and to enjoy with their pet owners. And one of the things that they do is that they bring a dog into the interview. Right. And so it's one thing for you to say, yes, I love pets. And another thing for you to, you know, kind of recoil at the interview, like, what is the dog doing here? And, you know, you never would have imagined that a dog might be judging you for your performance in the interview there. But what this company has found is that, you know, the degree to which you love pets, you know, matters quite a bit. If you're making pet food that's going to save the lives of pets, it matters how much you engage with the pet, and it doesn't really matter what role you're hiring them for, whether it's a marketing role or even a finance role. And that in particular, they have found that finance people, you know, these are people that you would not imagine would matter what customers think or what they think of customers, but when they hire finance people who are really into dogs and cats, that they actually get better performance out of them in the long run, and they feel part of the culture and ethos there. So if you are in a business-to-consumer category, then that's what I would say, is just find a subtle way to work it into the conversation to figure out if they actually genuinely have a love for what it is that you do and to what degree. Now, if you are in a business-to-business scenario and you're a small business, then this is actually even more powerful. So I mentioned the Generac example before. So Generac, they sell their generators through the Home Depots and the Lowe's, so kind of traditional retail, but a lot of what they sell is through distributors. And because it's a complicated sale, it's a complex piece of equipment, it's a lot of education and hand-holding that has to happen. And one of the really cool things that they found was that some of their best customers have actually become distributors, right? So let's say I went through a bad hurricane, Hurricane Andrew back in the day, and I said, you know what, never again, I want my generator. But it was really complicated, but I got into it and I learned about it, and it made such a huge difference in my life. A lot of those people have said, well, shoot, not only did I like it, I think a lot of other people would like it. I believe in the potential of this business. And it was so much harder for me to do it. I think I could actually do it differently. And lo and behold, Generac has hired hundreds of people to become their distributors, many of whom were former customers of theirs. And so, again, it's what oftentimes what I find is that in a business-to-business scenario, when the product of the category is a complex sale, right, it's a lot of working parts to it, or it's a long sales cycle where you have to figure out, I have to educate you on the category and the need and then the product and the brand and there's aftermarket service there, that more oftentimes than not, you will find that there are people who, when they navigate it through, they are the best to explain how to sell it to somebody else. And they have credibility because they can say, I used to be in your shoes. But more importantly, they will bring a passion and a creativity and a problem-solving ability that is just very different than just hiring somebody who says, yeah, I've sold lots of stuff, I can sell anything, versus someone who is truly themselves benefited from the category and the brand that you're selling as well to.
Dan, I want to ask one more question and turn it back to you. I just got an email brochure for a conference on social media, et cetera. And of the 18 speakers, only two were over the age of 30 or even 25. There seems to be a feeling that you could only hire young people to do social media. Do you find that to be the case, or because they are super consumers, or are other things working, and perhaps are wrong about that?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question you raise, because I would say for sure young people, it's their native language. They've grown up with social media, and certainly they're accustomed to it. Now, what I would say is that for a small business to really win using social media, it's not just about the technical know-how of how to navigate Instagram or Facebook or Snapchat. It's really what it is social media is about connecting people and telling stories, and it's about testimonials. And so my thing that I always say is that you can hire somebody to figure out the technical aspects of tweeting or Facebook posts or whatnot there. But the real value is not going to come in the technical know-how of how to reach people there. It's the power of the storytelling that's there. And that one of the things that I always say is just like how Disney and Marvel have made billions of dollars monetizing the origin stories of superheroes, you know, from Wolverine and X-Men and whatnot, is that every super consumer of a category, if you can find one, they have an origin story themselves of how they became super consumers into the categories. Because everyone started out, they weren't born that way. They started out as a non-consumer, they migrated to a light consumer, they may have become an average consumer, and then something clicked and they became a super consumer, and they started to evangelize the category in a way that was really quite powerful. This is something that I lay out in my book, Super Consumers, and that the important part about them and social media is that there is a story for how they became super in the first place, and that whatever you do, it's not just about the technical aspects and comfort with social media. It is about testimonials. It's about telling stories, and these stories are the things that actually sell your category and your business on your behalf. And even better, it's not coming from you. It's coming from somebody for whom your category or your brand or your business has made their lives better. And for them to tell that story through social media is the far more important part of it than somebody who knows just the technical aspects of what it is.
And Dan, back to you for about 5 minutes.
Okay. I want to take your last statement and twist it a little bit and see if you're offended about what I'm going to say.
Sure.
What you're talking about storytelling, but in the social media jargon, isn't it really about content and the quality of the content in the social media?
Yeah. No, and maybe just make sure I understand your question. Are you suggesting that content is different than storytelling?
No, what I'm saying is that you've come up with a new word in storytelling, when in fact, what we've heard for a long time about the effectiveness of social media is the ability to produce content that attracts a potential customer or viewer or listener and brings them back because something of substance is there. And so storytelling, if it's done well,
yes.
I mean, I have that same situation with my books. People pressured me to write a fourth version. And so if the story is good, you're saying, that will interest people. And if the story is not good, it won't interest people. So the story and the content of the story, which makes the story more believable or endearing or whatever the right word is, it's a combination of words. It's content and it's storytelling working together to appeal to a group of people.
Correct. And what I would say, I would build upon what you just said, is that it's the content and storytelling, not from an average consumer, but from a super consumer. That's what makes a difference, right? Because, so I'll give you a well-known cheese brand called Velveeta. It's something I had written about in HBR, is that the vast majority of people, if you ask them to tell a story about Velveeta, it would be one of two things. It would be, one is that I would never eat Velveeta, right? Is that, it's processed cheese, it's shelf-stable, I would never do that. Or, well, Velveeta's only for Super Bowl parties, and so why would you do anything beyond that? It's, my queso dipped, but I only have it once a year. Like, those are the type of stories you would get from a non-user or an average user. With the story and the content that you would get from a Velveeta super consumer would say, well, I buy 9 loaves of Velveeta a year. Well, why do you do that? Well, it's my secret weapon. So I can't get my kids to eat vegetables, but if I take Velveeta and I put it on to the broccoli stalk, it actually magically transforms it from something that's a yuck to something that I want to eat now going forward, right? And that what they'll tell you is that other cheeses don't cut it, right? You can put shredded cheese on it, you could put a slice of cheese on it, and it's just kind of messy, doesn't really work on the broccoli stalk. But if, in fact, you take Velveeta, Velveeta gets into every nook and cranny of the broccoli stalk that's there, and it makes for a completely different eating experience. And so if you ask consumers, this is the part of the story that has resonance, right? How many of you would want to buy more Velveeta? Not many people raise their hands, right? The people who are already doing it are great. The people who are not doing it say, no way. But if you ask people, how many of you would like your kids to eat more vegetables, almost every hand shoots up in the audience. And that then they realize that this story of how I became a Velveeta super consumer is not because I have 9 times more income than everybody else. It's not because I have a Super Bowl party that's 9 times the size of everybody else. It's that I have figured out different uses for this product in a way that has changed my life for the better. And that's the part that I think is the real genius of a super consumer story versus an average story, or super consumer content versus average content.
I know we're running.
I hate to break this up. It's been so interesting, but we have to say goodbye to Eddie Yoon. Eddie, your website again and how people could reach you?
Sure. My website is www.eddiewoodgrow.net. You can find me at Twitter, at Eddie Woodgrow, or you can find my book on Amazon as well, too.
What's the name of your book?
Super Consumers, A Simple, Speedy, and Sustainable Path to Superior Growth.
Well, Eddie, thank you so much for being with us. A link to your website will be up at the end of the show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
We did, too. And now a look ahead from Dan.
Recalculating Radio is growing, and they have some exciting guests coming in September, including the former head of Apple, John Sculley, president of a dog and cat food company, the founder of a company with a mobile app for workers, a barber whose shave cream promises a softer, more effective shave, the head of an innovative coffee company, and the leader of a firm that makes it easier for small business to utilize social media, and many, many more. So stay tuned for an exciting month from Recalculating Radio, Tuesdays at 10 a.m. and Fridays at 12 noon Eastern.
We're so happy to have Jason Vanderboom, the founder and CEO of ActiveCampaign. He was smart enough to see a gap in the marketing and sales automation for SMBs and has for years been building up a SaaS platform that caters directly to their distinct marketing and sales needs. He's here now to tell us more. Jason, welcome to the program. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your product, and your website.
Sure. Thanks for having me. So my name is Jason Van Boom. I started ActiveCampaign quite a while ago, actually, but started as a perpetual software company, focused on really just solving problems that businesses had with customer experience. So that, you know, dealt with everything from marketing, sales, customer service, and just basically any aspect or touch point a business has with their customer. About 3 years ago, we really started to make an impact into the marketing automation space. And from there, we've kind of continued to tailor kind of our approach to customer experience management.
Okay. Your website?
Our website is activecampaign.com.
Okay. Dan, do you want to start off?
So what kind of companies would be ideal to work with you?
Yeah, so really we target the small to medium-sized business that has some sort of an online presence already. So maybe that means they're sending a newsletter occasionally. Maybe they have an e-commerce component to their company, or they're just doing some Facebook ads or doing some general advertising.
And what would you can you give us an example of a recent client? You don't have to give us their name, but what their business was and how you helped them.
Yeah, so one example would be we have a custom tie manufacturer, which is a small business. We've helped through the nurturing and sales process. So as people reach out and want to have a custom tie designed, it goes through a pipeline. So like a rep is working on that. As it goes to production, it continues through this kind of nurturing stage. So during this time, it's a mixture of humans talking to the customer, but then also automations with some automated emails and automated follow-ups. Think about it like if anyone kind of falls off from the conversation, the automations can kind of help bring them back in and make sure everything is moving smoothly. And then by being able to manage everything from that first contact all the way through when something is designed and produced, and then leading into the post-sale to see if repeat business is possible with that customer.
So you work with the client in developing a more effective presence in social media. Would that be a fair statement?
Probably a little bit more on a broader spectrum. So social media is just one of the touch points. So we think of, you know, any time you can interact with the customer. So that's whether that's social or whether it's by email or actual phone calls. To be able to kind of catalog all of this information to a contact or to a customer, and then be able to, kind of a higher bulk level, be able to take action on it and actually make it actionable. So, you know, definitely more in the realm of just kind of trying to manage that complete customer experience or journey, if you will.
We've had discussions on this program several times about the difference between online marketing and big box store sales. And one of the things that we have concluded that virtually everybody that we've interviewed from the online marketing structure is more concerned about the quality of the customer service than what appears to be the interest in the big box store about customer service. Do you find that to be true?
Yeah, I could possibly see that. You know, they're looking at more of like selling a unit and not necessarily taking into account the entire kind of customer experience and how that could have an effect on things. I think also as you start getting into more of the online marketing, you're able to deliver extremely personalized and custom experiences automatically. That just isn't possible, you know, if it's purely face-to-face.
So that I'm glad you brought that up, because it leads me to a question that I wanted to ask you, and that is, what is the role, or what do you see is the evolving role in your business to, let's call it interactive, non-human social engineering, whatever the right words are, that it's not a human being anymore. It's artificial intelligence that's searching data, profiling, finding the right product to push to that particular customer. Do you think that artificial intelligence is going to play a larger role in what you do for your customers?
I think it does play a role, and it's going to be an increasingly important role, but I think it's far overhyped compared to where it should be. And what I mean from that is I see automation and then also elements of AI actually enabling when a human should be involved and when that personalized interaction should occur, and then also guiding and assisting a human in doing that. But I think any platform that's trying to go more down the road of almost treating the customer as like an inconvenience by trying to automate everything is a disastrous way for a company to kind of lead their marketing, sales, or support organization. Because then what you end up with is, no matter what sort of terminology or branding you put on it, we're putting customers through some sort of like a, think of a classic phone system, phone menu system of trying to identify what they want and outputting a bunch of things. We can get more and more clever with that. But I think the human element is vastly important. And I think a lot of companies are not giving it the focus that it should, especially when you start talking in the marketing technology space.
Well, it's interesting. I live in Southwest Florida, and we just came through the hurricane and came back. We went up to North Carolina to get away and then came back last Friday, and we stayed at a friend's house. And we were going out to dinner, and we weren't quite sure of where the location was. And the gentleman said, well, I've got this service. All I have to do is call them, and they'll send me the route. And I said, okay, that's the route. And he says, it's really done very well. Failed 4 times in a row. And he was very embarrassed about not only was he disconnected from the computer that was supposed to give him the directions, he was disconnected by the live person. We talked to 4 different live people trying to, and never did get the direction. But it sounded like what you said, that there is a point where we can automate up to a point, and then past that point it has to be human. Did I understand you to say that correctly?
Yeah, because to truly deliver like a customer, think of any customer experience that you really that stands out to you. It's not typically due to something that could be process oriented or something like that. It's something where there's a little bit of like there's a human involved. There's some sort of a maybe they get a little bit of extra information. It's how it was kind of conveyed to you in a personalized manner. But it's that human element that really transforms a customer experience typically. Now we can use AI, we can use technology to better enable humans so that we're spending our time on creating those experiences. But I really do believe that the idea of automation and human touch, it's more of a blend. It's not, you shouldn't pick one or the other. They need to go together.
Dan, I'd like to jump in here with a question. Jason, I'm a small business. I come to you. What do you ask? How does it work? How does exactly does it work? I have a budget. Let's say it's $20,000. How does it work?
Yeah, sure. So when you sign up for a service, the first thing that we're going to try to do is start to get your customer data into our platform. So that starts to allow us to help group things up and give you some ideas on what you could do in terms of business process. So let's say you're a shoe store or something like that, selling shoes online. So all of your past customers we would like to get into our platform. Then we make it very easy to integrate with other tools that you use that have customer data. So maybe that's like you use an e-commerce platform for selling the shoes. So we'll start streaming in all of kind of the purchase information. then what you would do is inside of our platform, you would create basically business processes or automation workflows. And those just allow you to do some simple things or some advanced things. So maybe you want to follow up with people that started to make a purchase but didn't complete it, or you wanted to create some automations to re-engage with people that purchase certain types of products. What we focus on doing is making it so that you don't have to think as much about what are these processes you could put in place. So we just want to make it easy to get all the other customer data start to compile inside of our platform, and then give you some sample ideas of areas that we think you could optimize for sales, maybe for service after the fact, basically anytime you're going to have kind of communication with the customer.
Well, Dan, let me ask one more question. Over the weekend, I got an email from Slice. It said $2 off if I went to my local pizza place and bought a pizza, they would give me $2 off. And then when I didn't do it, I got an email on Sunday saying that if I went Sunday or Monday, they'd give me $5 off. Is that the type of program you would do?
Yeah, so that's an example of something that we could do. And it's really all about messaging kind of at the right time and in a personalized manner for people based on their actions or inactions, versus like what you would find traditionally where a promo is sent out to all of the customers or something like that. And it's not really a personalized marketing campaign or a personalized experience in any way.
But it has to be the customer. But can you add customers from your database or from some other database?
Yeah, so it would be customers that are with that company already or potential customers. So we can help identify and have people give you their contact information, which can be compiled into our platform. But yeah, it's more on interested customers.
Back to you, Dan.
I'm fascinated by something that I've seen recently that would be, as I understand it, would fly in the face of what you're saying. And I happen to agree with what you're saying, but I'm curious. You may have seen these commercials for robo-investors.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is they're taking the human decision-making process out of the investment process and telling you, put in the data and the computer will make the decision of what to buy, when to sell it. And
yep.
So that there is no personal interaction. Now, I'm a registered investment advisor. I've been in the business of managing money for 44 years. What I don't understand is how somebody decided at a brokerage firm, we no longer need the human element in helping people decide what their money should do for them.
Yeah. No, that's an interesting case. I do think it's slightly different, whether it's right or wrong, but I think it's slightly different in the way of they're able to try to make this argument and make this pitch for something based on saying that data and analytically they'll be able to make decisions, right? And at the end of the day, the buyer in this scenario is the person investing. And their main concern so much more than anything else is on return. It also plays into the idea that AI, machine learning, and everything like that has been hyped up to a degree of it's this mystery box of it's going to do something great, even though theoretically the model behind it might not be. But the hype has been so overwhelming that it gives people this idea that it will actually deliver on that core thing they want in that area. And then, you know, apparently then they can get away from the customer experience side a little bit from the human touch standpoint. Now, whether that continues to deliver over time as people experience it is something, you know, I think, you know, we'll find out over time. I also think the buying process of more of a traditional service or product is a little bit different in the way of it's not as analytical and based on just trying to get a return out of something. So if you're like buying a service or something like that, it's usually not as simple of knowing like the service is going to be. You maybe have five or six different services you're looking at, and you need to dig into your use case and whatnot. Whereas the investment side, there's definitely differences between an investment advisor and kind of the robo-investment, like what you're talking about.
Right.
I think the investment community would maybe have to try to differentiate a little bit more on the human element to be able to sway the people that have chosen to go that way.
When somebody comes to you,
Dan, we have to stop a moment for a word from our sponsor. We're here with James Van Boon. He's talking about his very fascinating. What would you call it?
I'd call it a customer engagement platform.
But we unfortunately have to stop for a word from our sponsor.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
We're here with Jason Van Boom talking about how small businesses can more easily navigate the social media sales effort. Dan, back to you.
Thank you. Jason, I was going to ask you a question before the break, so I'll ask again. As part of your service, can you quantify to your potential customers the benefits of using your service?
Yeah, so at the end of the day, to get some of that like hype and mystery out of a lot of the marketing technology, you have to have some actual data. So we can track everything from when someone starts entering some sort of a process, what maybe they're a new lead entering the system, and then give attribution behind what everything takes place in terms of the goals you're looking to have. So maybe that's closing a sale. Maybe that's having them take an action on your site, things like that. But exposing and be able to work with custom sort of goals for each business that each business can define, they're able to see the success in a relatively short period of time. And for SMB, that's critical to make it easy for them to do that and then easy to watch the results over time.
Do you have an input in helping the customer decide what the success measurement standards should be?
Yeah, that's a good question. We have some defaults in place for a lot of the common different business scenarios, and it kind of goes back to what I was talking about as well. It's important from the result standpoint, but it's also from the what should the process be that you're trying to do. Like if it's a marketing campaign, what are some ideas around your vertical that you could run with? So we try to give ideas every step of the way to avoid that blank slate and to avoid that idea of having to think of everything yourself. Because oftentimes if you make an SMB have to come up with that, there's so many different things going on that, that having that inspiration can be really changing for them.
I've heard, although I've not used it, that there's a process called Google Words. Are you familiar with that?
Sounds vaguely familiar, but I'm not too familiar with that.
Okay, that's fine. Either am I, so we're even.
Okay.
who is the typical customer for you, or client, or whatever the right word is to describe that relationship?
Sure. The typical business coming in is typically somewhere around like 20 to 80 employees in size. At the same time, we have a lot of solo entrepreneurs and much larger corporations using it. But that size, we find, they have someone in a dedicated marketing role. They're starting to really understand the value and they appreciate the value of optimizing the customer experience overall. And they've also used some sort of marketing technology in the past, whether that be advertising. Maybe they send out some basic email newsletters to stay in touch with their customers or other things like that. So we're able to then take that business and self-serve using our platform. They can then
kind of take their marketing, take their sales and service up a notch and continue to work on that customer experience.
Do people come to you to expand the relationship they have with an existing customer?
Yeah. So I'd say a good portion of the effort is really nurturing those relationships and over time. So a concept we like to have all of our customers use is the idea of all customers should be in some form of constant communication. Now, that doesn't mean you're actually emailing them, and that doesn't mean you're actually calling them or something like that continually. But it's more that there's always some sort of a business process set up that's watching for activity, inactivity, maybe they're browsing your site, things like that, and identifying opportunities for when you engage or when you should, so that you can continually keep this conversation going over time, but according to their cadence and their wants, versus just trying to push promo and promo and promo after a customer or after a past customer, which will surely just push them away. And it could actually damage your brand if you do that.
There's a great deal of discussion about the virtual collapse of the big box retail stores and the number of expected closing of mall branches, mall stores is estimated to be 8,500 stores closing between for 2017. Have the shopping patterns so dramatically changed that in-store shopping will rapidly, and I mean rapidly, become a thing of the past?
I think it has of course changed to a great extent with just accessibility and timing primarily. So we're obviously, the type of, people want things and they want it pretty quickly. As we move more and more towards you can have something same day, I definitely think that the idea of stores is definitely becoming a little bit more and more specialized, I'd say. I don't know if they would ever be obsolete entirely because certain products, certain types of things, it can be nice to have that option. And then also as you kind of, build into more of these completely personalized experiences, even shopping for like everyday items and whatnot, and having, a company suggest when you need to restock up on something or something like that, it's all leading more and more towards the idea of like you're not going to have to make that, trip to the store then. It's an interesting thing going on.
I saw experienced how difficult it was any mainstream major mall to find somebody anything about where stuff was. Recently, I've experienced that in Walmart. There's nobody there to help. They're doing more and more of their business online, but in order to do business online, doesn't the customer have to have a pretty good idea what they want in order to buy? Unlike going into a store, you can visually see everything and look at everything you want to look at, where in a store you've got to do page views and all that stuff. So
I think the more we can, the more a brand can deliver on going beyond just like similarities of products, but exploring based on like what someone's looking for and then presenting those in different ways so that you can easily kind of look through as if you were scanning, a shelf. I think that ability is there. I also think that the movement towards more automated checkouts and whatnot is obviously making it easier to have a push towards online because it's one step away from that. All you would need, the only reason to do that instead of online would be the time to actually get the product. And as Amazon Prime and others push into, making that within hours and less, it's going to be pretty interesting to see what happens there.
We have to stop now. We're talking with Jason Van Boom. He's founder and CEO of Active Campaign. Tell us your website and how people can reach you, Jason.
Sure. The website's activecampaign.com, and I can be reached at jason@activecampaign.com.
Okay. It's been fascinating. One last thought. What is the one thing SMBs should remember when starting out a campaign with your company?
One thing they remember is honestly to start focusing on this sooner than later, because it's not only easier to start a little bit sooner, but it really helps to kind of have growth that starts to be exponential growth if you start really caring about that customer experience and really communicating with your customers over time, because that's the fastest way for an SMB to really grow their business.
Thank you so much, Jason, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Yep.
Now, a word from our sponsor.
Before you hear this, or this, or even this, before you turn a key, step on the gas, and let it rip, before you get up and out and on the road, you have to be fueled by something. Make sure that something is Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Dan Perkins here with your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. Are you having trouble growing your business? Do you have a mentor? Sometimes running a small business can be overwhelming. You need a mentor. A business mentor can help you in many facets of your business. So here's your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. The SBA has a free program called SCORE. These individuals give of their time and share their experiences to create the next generation of small business owners who help grow the American economy. SCORE is the nation's largest network of volunteer expert business mentors. It provides free and confidential business consulting. These volunteers will work with individuals on starting a business, solving business problems, and growing a business. Visit www.score.org and you may just hit a home run. This has been your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day. I'm Dan Perkins.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Well, Dan, what do you have to say about today's guests?
But they were both very, very interesting. They totally two different perspectives. Last guest tells us just how much social media is important to a successful for a small businessman. And I concluded, you might agree or disagree, Don, that without social media and without the internet, there would be an awful lot of businesses that never would have been started.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more on that last point. The question is, my question is already, should they have been started? And if so, did they start in the right way? It's interesting over the years, as we've been on this program and others, how many companies now start just internet only and then add a brick and mortar component afterwards, 2 or 3 years afterwards. I saw a statistic just last night that said the number of websites adding brick-and-mortar stores had doubled in the last 6 months. Whether it was true or not, I don't know, but it's still something they were saying. What's your final thought? I wanted to bring up something which had nothing to do with small business, but I think is really important. I don't know if you saw that the Teamster Union on Friday announced very quietly that they were cutting the pensions of every retiree by 20% starting October 1. I don't know if you saw that.
I did not, but I'm going to go look for it in a hurry.
Yeah, fascinating. It was a buried item that I saw And to me, that's the a bellwether that we shouldn't ignore. But I guess it's time now for Dan, to you and me, to say goodbye.
Goodbye, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.